Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And perhaps most importantly, the cabinet ministers involved are allowed to have a financial stake in the decision. They can profit from this approval, so they could be invested in Enbridge and still take part in the decision. That's how weak the ethics rules are.
That's the voice of Duff Conacher from Democracy Watch. On this week's show, we speak to Duff about a decline in voter participation across the country and what can be done to turn things around. Stay tuned. Today, we're going to investigate a disturbing trend which shows a decline in Canadians' democratic participation. In the recent Ontario election, only 52% of eligible voters cast a ballot, which is actually the second lowest turnout ever, tied with 2011, which means only 20% cast a vote for the winning Liberals, calling into question their mandate to govern. In BC, a similar trend last year, only 50 to 52% of eligible voters cast ballots. And federally, only 61% cast a ballot in 2011, which was the third lowest in Canadian history. Online to speak about this is Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch. And we're going to speak about what's happening here and how we can turn it around. Welcome to the show, Duff.
Thank you very much.
Now, what's happening here? Has apathy won over? What kind of things, in your opinion, has caused this low voter turnout, specifically to the recent Ontario election?
Well, the cause is difficult to know, other than post-election polling that's been done, mainly federally, but also by some provincial agencies. They've done surveys. And generally, the reason voter turnout's dropped 20% or so across the country in the past 15, 20 years is because of people feel no matter who they vote for, they're going to get dishonest, unethical, secretive, unrepresentative, and wasteful politicians and decisions. And they're just not that enthusiastic about voting in that situation. And then secondly, that their vote may not count because of the voting system. So if they're in a safe riding, whether they vote for the winner or the loser, winning party or losing party, it's not going to change because that riding has always voted Liberal or always voted Conservative or NDP or whatever. So in those safe ridings, it's kind of logical for people to stop showing up because their vote doesn't make a difference in their mind. And if we had a proportional voting system or even a ranked ballot system or any other system other than the voting system we have in Canada, those votes would count. And so the voter turnout would be encouraged. And then if we had all the other changes to require honest, ethical, open, representative, and waste-preventing actions by everyone in politics, voters would also, I think, be encouraged to come out and vote because they would like what they're going to get.
Okay, let's start with the voting system. In my opinion, first past the post is a horrible system. When people ask me why why I think people don't vote, it's because they get discouraged because the votes don't produce accurate results. For example, in my riding, the NDP get about 37% of the vote, the Conservatives 25%, the Liberals 20%. So the majority of voters in my riding don't get what they want. So why would they vote in the first place? But yet the Ontario voters rejected a change to the electoral process in 07. And here in BC, we also rejected any change. So where do we go from here when it seems that people are very afraid to change the system that's been around so long?
Well, part of the problem with the referenda votes that were held in BC and Ontario is that systems were chosen that were by the assemblies that were formed by the governments in Ontario and BC. The systems that they ended up choosing were making too many changes at once. In BC, changing the size of ridings, changing the voting system, there was worries about now elected politicians would be disconnected from the riding. You would have two politicians per riding, so which one's really responsible? in Ontario, they were going to have a purely proportional system, and there would be a list that would be developed to correct the mistake that the voting system causes in terms of the number of seats awarded to each party. So if a party got a higher percentage of votes than seats, the party leader would then choose from a list the politicians that would fill those extra seats that party would be rewarded. And that sounds like a Senate, the party leader choosing people as opposed to the voters choosing them. And that's what turned a lot of people off. There wasn't great voter education. There wasn't a lot of funding devoted to it. There were no campaigns that were easily able to confuse people. So those two referendums and the fact that they lost, I'll talk about BC in a bit, it didn't really lose, shouldn't be taken as an indication about Canadians' feelings of the voting system. A majority of Canadians do want the voting system changed so that the popular vote is better reflected in terms of which parties get how many seats and politicians in the legislature. In BC, the first referendum actually passed with 57% of the vote. Unfortunately, the government put in a requirement that it had to be a two-thirds approval, which nothing else has to be approved by two-thirds in BC except this. And that also was unfair. And really, the voting system in BC should have changed after that first referendum.
Now, I was talking to my coworker and I was promoting proportional representation, and he came up with a very good point, and which is hard for me to argue, is that with proportional representation, you get a lot of cronyism, and it's hard to get rid of those long-time entrenched people. Now, and now I just want to run this by you.
Name the people on the list.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so here's what you do. The list should be made up of the people who don't win their seat, but do the best of any of the candidates that run for that party. So let's say the NDP won 30% of the vote in an election, but only got 20% of the seats. The other, and it was out of, there were 100 seats in the legislature. So they would get 20 seats, but they deserve 30. So where would the other 10 come from? They would come from, the first person on the list would be the candidate that didn't win but had the highest percentage of votes in their riding of any of the candidates for the NDP. And then it would go down the list to the number two would be the one who had the second highest. So those people would be the most popular candidates for that party and wouldn't owe their job to the leader. They would still owe their job to voters. You do it that way, and they will lose the next time around if they don't please the voters in the riding and don't rank in the whatever number are going to be added the next time around. So that's a way to safeguard against those list people being cronies of the party leader. It's democratic, and it will work.
Now, I want to run something past you that a lot of North Americans don't pay attention to, but recently elections in El Salvador and Brazil had over 80% voter turnout, and what they do is a runoff vote. They have the philosophy that if you don't have 50 plus one of the votes, you have no mandate to govern. So all the parties run, and if the winning party or the one that gets most votes doesn't have 50%, there's a runoff election a month later, and only the top two vote-getting parties can run, and the one that wins that becomes president. What's your feedback on that kind of system?
Sure. Runoff system is another better system because the person has to get more votes to win. Pretty much any system is better than the one we have now. Usually there's safeguards in each one. For example, those who argue in favor of proportional representation usually say, but no party should be able to get seats with less than 5% of the vote. And that's mainly based on the problems they have in Israel and Italy, where whatever percentage of votes you get as a party, you get seats. And that creates a lot of small parties that are not very representative. And those small parties are able to force the bigger, much more representative parties to do things that aren't really in the public interest. So, and that's not democratic either. You shouldn't give undue influence and power to a very small factional party that doesn't, that represents a very small percentage of the population. So all of them have, you know, qualifiers put in. The thing with a runoff vote system is that the it just takes longer if you don't have the win in the first round, if no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. So that's the one problem with that system, and would make it difficult for Canadians to accept, because we're used to getting the results the next day and not having to wait then another month for a runoff election.
Exactly. And let's lead into the next point. Well, before we get there, let's say there's a lot of grassroots, and I know there is, because I speak to people all the time, people who would love to change the electoral system. Where do they get started? Where do people go to get the ball rolling to get the referendum on the ballot? Or what would be your best suggestion?
In British Columbia, you mean?
Or Ontario, BC, or in general?
In BC, you can initiate a referendum. People can. Now, you have to get 10% of the voters signed up in every riding. In the U.S., about half the states allow voters to petition and put a question on a referendum ballot. And they don't require 10% of the voters to be signed up in every single riding. They just usually require 10% of the voters to be signed up from the whole state. So BC's system is not very democratic. It's really there to try and thwart this from being used by voters. But that's one thing that people could do, is try to organize such a petition campaign, difficult as it is. In Ontario, you can't petition and put a question on a referendum ballot for all voters to vote on. You can only appeal to the government to do it. And it's not really on the agenda right now in Ontario, even though it should be, because the current Liberal government that just got elected, only 19.5% of eligible voters actually cast a ballot in favor. Of the people who did vote, the Liberals were supported by 38% of the voters who did vote. But again, only 19.5% of eligible voters. And they have won just over 50% of the seats. So there's really reasons to question their legitimacy to govern, given that only 19% of eligible voters actually voted in favor of them.
It's quite incredible when you think of it.
So, you know, there's a large national coalition that Democracy Watch participates in called Fair Vote Canada. And the push is just continuing, hoping that this will happen.
Absolutely. It's quite incredible to think of, you know, people fought and died to have this democracy, and we're willing to surrender legislative power with, you know, 2 votes out of 10. It's quite incredible. Let's touch on the accountability issue, because I think this is the where the cynicism grows. Between we elect people and then they go and do whatever they want, and they say we can hold them accountable next election, but this is cold comfort for voters. For example, the federal government just gave conditional approval of the Enbridge pipeline, despite vast opposition from First Nations, and every poll shows the majority of British Columbians don't want this, yet they act very paternalistically, saying that they know what's best for us, and there's really not a lot we can do. So where do we start with the accountability issue when we just look in disgust and it just turns people off? How do we get hold of this issue?
We need our voting systems changed, in all of them, the ones in the legislature, the cabinet voting and decision-making system, appointment system, and Northern Gateway decision highlights all of these flaws. The federal cabinet appoints the board that reviewed the proposal. So they can easily just choose people that agree with what the government wants to do, and then they go ahead and approve things as the government wants. So they're not an independent board, the National Energy Board that reviewed the Enbridge proposal. There is excessive secrecy in these decision-making processes. There's no review of the cabinet's approval decision allowed, even if they ignore facts and environmental protection rules and other criteria. You can't appeal it. And as well, so essentially they're allowed to be dishonest. And there's even secret lobbying allowed still. So who knows what lobbying went on of the cabinet. It could be hidden because of loopholes in the federal lobbying disclosure system. Mm. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, the cabinet ministers involved are allowed to have a financial stake in the decision. They can profit from this approval. So they could be invested in Enbridge and still take part in the decision. That's how weak the ethics rules are.
Oh, my goodness.
So lots of problems there. And that's why, again, 20% of voters have turned off, because they know that this is how the system works. So even if you vote for a candidate, the candidate wins and their party wins, they may be, and likely did, bait you with false promises that they're going to break now that they're in power, but also very likely going to be doing some secret deals behind closed doors with corporate lobbyists and acting in other unethical, dishonest, and undemocratic and secretive ways. So that's why we need to clean up not just the voting system and change it, but we need to strengthen all of these good government rules to ensure that if you win power, you have to govern democratically. Or you will be held accountable and your decisions will be reversed. And then another great thing that we're pushing for, which doesn't exist in BC yet, does exist in Ontario, Alberta, and Manitoba, is the right to decline your ballot, to essentially vote none of the above.
I want to touch on that. What is the point of declining a ballot? Can you dig into that a little bit? Like, some people would say, why even bother?
First of all, if you're voting, want to vote for a party that doesn't have a candidate in your riding, which happens a lot if you're voting for a smaller party, because often they don't, so they're not able to run candidates in every riding, then having that right to still turn up but vote none of the above is key. It's a key voter right to have. But beyond that, the current system in Ontario, Manitoba, and Alberta is not the system that should be there. What you do is you go to the ballot box, the polling station worker hands you the ballot, and then you hand it back and say, I decline. You can't give a reason. So that's the system that Democracy Watch is proposing, that it should be on the ballot at the bottom as a box that you check, say, none of the above. And then there should be a couple of lines below that where you could just write in a reason. You wouldn't be able to write an essay, but you'd be able to write something like, I don't like the voting system. I want it changed. I want the ethics rules strengthened. Whatever change you want to see that would then make you feel like you want to actually vote for a candidate from a party. Or you'd be able to write in, of course, no candidate from the party I support in this riding. And the election agency would compile that and report it out with the election results. And it would be great for everyone. The parties would learn why people are voting none of the above, so they would be able to take that into consideration when in their next campaign and their platform and their actions leading up to the next election. And it would encourage people to come out, because they would be able to give this reason, if they don't support everyone, as to why, and have it be heard and registered. So that's our proposal. It's existed as a right in law for 40 years in Ontario, and politicians passed it for the good reason that this should be one of the rights that voters have, to vote none of the above.
I think that's a very good public policy point, and a very good point you made, that if the voter turnout is so low and maybe 5 or 6% of the ballots can be tabulated, that people just don't like the voting system, would be a very powerful message to get moving and change that system. There's another pet peeve I have, and that is you get very kind of conscientious people who want to do the public service. They want to run for office. They get elected, but then they have to be a trained seal. They can't disagree with the party, or their leader won't sign off on their nomination form. Can you touch on this and your thoughts about changing that process?
Yes. There's a number of things that need to be done to free and empower politicians from the control of the party leaders. And one of them is that party leaders across the country generally have this power to say, sorry, you're no longer the candidate and won't be the candidate for our party in the next election. And they can do it arbitrarily for any reason. And it's not an idle threat. It's a threat that former MPs report is made frequently, that if they don't toe the party line, the party leader will ensure that their career is over because they won't be allowed to run in the next election for the party. Very rarely, it's only happened four or five times the last 20 years, a federal MP has stood up and said, I don't care, I'll run as an independent, and defied the party leader after getting kicked out of the party caucus. Sometimes they win the next election that as an independent MP, but they lack the resources to take on the parties, and the party that they come from usually really devotes a lot of resources to defeating them, to send the message that, hey, toe the party line or you don't have a career. So that change needs to happen. And thankfully, a conservative MP named Michael Chong has a private member bill currently that has quite a bit of momentum behind it. It will get considered and voted on in the fall in the federal parliament. It's a federal bill. And one of the things he's changing is taking away that power from the party leaders. They would still be allowed to screen candidates for suitability, you know, and have criteria such as you can't have a criminal record and run for us. But they wouldn't arbitrarily be able to prevent anyone from running. And the other things that need to change are that the party leader chooses which members get to sit on the committees in the legislature. That shouldn't be done. It should be all the politicians in the party choosing that democratically. Not just the party leader dictating. They should also, all the politicians in the party should choose whether someone, one of the politicians in the party gets kicked out of the party caucus. But that decision is now made by the leader as well. And finally, the politicians should have a formal power. If a majority of politicians in a party's caucus decide that the leader should go, they should be able to initiate a review by all the members of the party. Of the party leader. And some of those elements are in Michael Chong's bill, not all of them. But these changes are definitely needed, and it's a major turnoff for people as well, and why the voter turnout's dropped. Why elect someone who's not going to do what the voters in the riding want, but instead will just do whatever the party leader says that they have to do? People don't like that. They want a representative. They want to elect somebody who's going to represent them and their interests, not just toe the party line.
Exactly. What comes to mind is the federal government closed a Coast Guard base in Vancouver, which was very loved and very, you know, we're a port city, and there was a lot of negative backlash, but not one conservative in British Columbia spoke out against this decision. They all just sat in silence, and they're supposed to be representing us, and they closed the base. So it's very, you know, disgusting, but I'm very hopeful that this bill will pass. And finally, I don't know if you can help me with this one, Duff, but it seems that negativity wins. We had an election in BC that I've never seen such negative campaigning. I know the Ontario election had a lot of that, but they had Adrian Dix as the NDP leader's head on a weather vane with storm clouds. They went down in the dirt, and it turns people off, especially young people. What can we do about this massive infusion of negativity, because it seems to win elections?
Well, we don't really know whether it wins elections, unfortunately. It seems to, but I can also tell you every party that has promised to clean up politics and made it a strong focus of their campaign, every party that's done that in the last 20 years has won more seats and more votes. So that's making positive proposals as opposed to just slinging mud at the current government, the party in power, and saying, you know, they're bad, but not talking at all about what you would do differently. So when you look at the BC election, Democracy Watch usually does a report card on the party's democratic good government platforms in the provincial elections, federal elections. We did one for the BC election. The Green Party received the best grade of C-. That's not great. Conservatives were a D-, NDP a D-, and the Liberals an F. So the NDP didn't really counter that negative advertising with a positive platform. They also flip-flopped on a few issues. So I wouldn't say that it was the negativity that necessarily worked. I think there were a lot of reasons why the NDP went from a leading position to losing that election. And part of it was they didn't have a strong platform about cleaning up politics. Federally, the last few elections have been lots of mudslinging. And again, the opposition parties, other than the Green Party, which increased its vote share and elected an MP, they were the only ones who had a strong platform on cleaning up politics. In the Ontario election, the opposition parties all slung mud at the Liberals. The best grade for on our report card was an E. The Liberals and NDP tied with an E. The Conservatives and the Greens got an incomplete. They had so few. We graded them in 16 areas. They only made weak promises in two areas. And so it's just incomplete. They weren't even talking really seriously about cleaning up politics. So mudslinging will definitely work in those situations. I don't know why parties don't get this. If you look at election results for the last 20 years, the thing that shifts voters to support a party is if the party says we will not do politics as usual anymore, and we'll make it illegal to do dishonest, unethical, secretive, unrepresentative, and wasteful politics. But we won't allow anyone in politics to do that, but because we're going to strengthen the rules, strengthen enforcement, strengthen the penalties. And every party that's done that in the last 20 years has won more seats. And it's just, I find it bizarre that again and again we're seeing elections recently where none of the parties make strong promises in this area. They all say they want to get into power. They're not doing very much to convince voters to vote for them by just slinging mud.
Also, a lot of that mudslinging is paid for, unfortunately, with taxpayers' dollars for some of these ads, but that's a different story for a different day. We're almost out of time, so Duff, thank you for doing this, and can you tell listeners how to get resources from your website and any final thoughts before we go?
Sure. Well, I mean, voting is giving a reference letter to someone for a job, and you wouldn't give a reference letter to someone if you thought that they were going to lie, cheat, and steal on the job. And it's not the fault of the current crop of candidates in any election, but they're inheriting the past behavior of other past politicians. But the way to overcome that is they have to promise to do things differently, and not enough of them are. So lots of changes. As I mentioned, these 100 loopholes have to be closed in every government level across the country before we'll have real democracy. And people can see much more about how they can push for the 100 loopholes to be closed at democracywatch.ca. We've got 11 campaigns for democratic government, 3 campaigns for corporate responsibility changes. Very easy for people to send a letter to their local politician, federal politician, and party leaders across the country calling for these changes, again, at democracywatch.ca. And we welcome people's support in however they want to support Democracy Watch's campaigns.
Thank you so much for spending a few moments with me, and congratulations on your ongoing work to improve the democratic environment in this country.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Okay, bye for now.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.